We are not heroes, nor are we villains, neither kings nor magicians, but we can tell you their stories. We are the Lore Keepers, and we welcome you to Hallowmay.
Welcome to Hallowmay. You've tuned in to Lore Keepers, a podcast devoted to chronicling the serialized world building of a sprawling tapestry of interwoven lore. I am Frank.
I'm Carter.
And this season, our focus is on God's faith and the relationship between mortals and immortals. So sit back, close your eyes, and let our tingling audio gateway sweep you into the realms of Hallowmay.
This week, we're talking about the wonderful demigods of Hallowmay. We're revisiting our demigods specifically to talk about in Avum Tertius when there were just a bunch of them. They were running around, they were fucking each other, little demigod babies. And there were just so many that the gods are like, look, we need to do something about this. But what did they do before the gods put their foot down? Because we've already talked about how the gods put their foot down. They laid down the law. They're like, look, stop being gods. You can have demigodhood. But so there's a little bit of, like, what were the demigods like before, when they were kind of gods, kind of not, and that before demigods were, like, serialized and made clear, and also, like, what has happened after that? How many demigods are there? What do they do? Who's their daddy? Etc.
Yeah. Okay, so just, you want me to do what I usually do and just give a little recap of kind of some of the content we've talked about that's relevant to this?
Just start waffling.
So first of all, Avum Tertius. Avum Tertius is the third age. Avum just means age in, I don't know, some old-timey version of Hallowmay. I'm pretty sure it's just like Latin somewhere in there, or Latin-inspired. But yeah, Avum Tertius, third age, happens after Avum Secunda, which is like the third age is sort of the first time after the Ash Curse that since this, like, you know, breaking of the world, that the gods are actually reconnected to the mortal world. And what we've talked about so far, you know, we can't really get into, I don't think we're going to get into Ash Curse stuff. I think we might get into a little Avum Secunda stuff. But as far as Avum Prima is concerned, the sort of the main difference that we've talked about, and sort of as we first investigated demigods and what they are, really what we're talking about in this episode is going to be, maybe demigod is actually a bit of a misnomer. We might want to kind of approach that differently. I think the term that we've used in the past is sort of like either first essential or almost like, I think we've used the term mortal godhood to refer to something like that. But just to, yeah, kind of clear the air, Avum Prima, during Avum Prima, the first age, you know, there's this, everyone is in balance. You know, you have sort of these nascent creatorlings who are mortal entities who one day will kind of graduate. The divine plan, anyways, was to, you know, this ascended, kind of they become creators in their own right. That doesn't happen because a being, the one who was, as we refer to them now, who has had their name taken away, is now just referred to as the Nameless One, basically kind of cursed the world. That's the Ash Curse. You know, we won't really get into what exactly happened there beyond the fact that they effectively severed the cord that united and connected the Aetherium, the realm of the gods, to the Materium, the realm of mortals. Avum Secunda, as a result, is a pretty dire time. The land is scoured by the Ash Curse. Most life dies. What is left over are these pretty tyrannical empires run by the Blood Elves. The Sanguine Elves. Blood Elves are WoW. Yep, Sanguine Elves are our cheap knockoff.
Yep.
But, you know, with an added twist of sort of magical vampirism, which I think also might just be Blood Elves, but I don't know. It's been a while
We do vampirism that gives them magic. They do magic that gives them vampirism.
Maybe, sure. Why not? It does literally like manifest though as your classic like Nosferatu-esque features, Dracula type shit. You know, if you wanted to do kind of some of the vampire, the
less bats
masquerade type shit, you could definitely find some crossover there. Avum Secunda is not a great time for anybody. Humans are enslaved. You know, there's like a lot of bad shit that goes down. The dwarves, gnomes, and halflings are all kind of their progenitors, the Dosumai, are mostly in hiding or just kind of sticking to their own. There's shit that goes down with the Drakenfall, which is sort of like the Chromatics versus the Metallics. There's a lot of bad stuff that happens.
Avum Secunda is definitely the most insular of all evil.
It's extremely isolated, cut off from pretty much every other realm of reality, which is not what most of the other Avums are like. Avum Tertius, things get better, kind of. They get much more epic, right? So your problems are, there's more power to go around, which means each person has more power to address the plight that they see, but also it means that those who wish to, who are corrupted by power or use it tyrannically, have much more of it. And there's a lot. So as a result, Avum Tertius is a lot more chaotic. And previously, this was kind of more like we had kind of approached it like, you know, maybe knights and kingdoms and a little bit more of the flavors of perhaps a Dragonlance. And I think that that's still there. Absolutely. I think it's a little less homogenous now. And I think what we're recognizing is, as a result of the way that we discovered and sort of uncovered some things in previous episodes, which I'll try to remember to include their reference in the podcast description, because that would be a really good precursor episode to the content we're going to talk about here.
Church.
The gods. Sorry, go ahead.
I have a good political example with what's going on with Tertius, as opposed to Cordis, which we'll see in a bit. Tertius is like the fall of the Roman Empire, where you get like, you've got the Eastern Roman Empire, you got the Western Roman Empire, and then you got some like nation states dotted around that all are, you know, helping each other out, fighting each other. But there's much bigger states, much bigger stakes. Mm-hmm. But there's still a lot of unity in certain empires. Whereas when you get to Cordis, as we will see, that's when we get to like medieval Europe. Italy is in 1,000 different pieces. Germany is in 1,000 different pieces. France and Britain are at each other's throats.
Mm-hmm. Except. Yeah, without question, we definitely based a lot of the ways that we have approached these different ages as kind of subdividing some of the histories of Western Europe, especially because Everast is the way, just the reality of the situation. My knowledge of history is mostly limited to those areas. That is something that I want to continue to work on because it's an inherently limiting factor. But also it's some of the least likely for me to accidentally exoticize shit too. That's also something to be careful about. And anyways, if you're playing cosplay with history too much, that can always be a fraught origin. But the point is that it makes for at least an engaging enough sort of storytelling device, and it makes sense as far as the world building is concerned. Anyway, so Avum Tertius, definitely, you're right. Like a lot of competing empires. The Elven Empire, the Sanguine Empire, gets fractured into the sort of the multifarious states of the Eldian Imperio, different, you know, states that are vying for control and power. And so up until this point, we've pretty much only articulated these things in a kind of political way. And now we've gotten the opportunity to look at this from a completely different perspective as a result of the season 4's focus on gods and the origin of where demigods came from. And what we were able to figure, the long and short of it, is essentially when the gods of the Aetherium got their first look at reality again, at the Materium, the world, the realm of mortals, after Avum Secunda, because they were severed, right? That tie was severed. One of the things that sort of ended the age of the second age, the Avum Secunda, was the fact that the mortals themselves, led by a gnome by the name of Tiri Ro, Rock-Rutted Ministeri, were actually able to figure out, like, oh, shit, we can kind of rebuild the bridge from our side. And so they allow, they get this way for ley line spires. They build these ley line spires that each sort of draw 1/9 of the magic of the abstracts, which we're not going to get into right now. Maybe we'll get into it later, but we don't have the time. Yeah, so as that all, like, that strengthens and creates what we have referred to as the culminant thread, which is this basically very, very narrow bridge. It is a shadow of what the access to power that mortals used to have to magic, but now they have some access to magic. Magic, in addition to being like this, this, you know, catalyst of, you know, changing kind of reality as you see fit, really one of the key aspects is that it actually allows for almost like a soul, or the way that, you know, what we conventionally think of one. So you have more ability to make ethical decisions, or like, you know, maintain some kind of morality that is actually more natural to the soul. There were things that people figured out during Avum Secunda, but they required sort of almost like a prosthetic. Which doesn't invalidate it whatsoever. It's more just saying, like, this is now, it's more natural. You can breathe without a respirator. It's like that. So, anyways, Avum Tertius, it is a boom of magical power, because all of this buildup of magic that was supposed to come into the world for literally tens of thousands of years can come flooding in. And it's still, you know, forced through a bottleneck, but it just ends up being tremendously more magic than it would have otherwise. And the world almost leaps to catch up. As a result, consensus reality is kind of all over the place as this flow that the gods are meant to govern. But when they first get their new glimpse of reality, it's no longer this easy job of governing a perfect world. There is chaos. There is slavery. There's like, these monstrosities that have been frothed forth from both the Nameless One. And now there's like fallen angels and devils and shit who are attempting to attack the land. And in the midst of this, before anybody is waiting for gods, some people start to kind of try and lead others. Get a strong following behind them. And the more that they get elevated because of consensus reality and because of the way that reality works, they start to become deified even. People literally like either esteem them or worship them. Yes, worship. Something that is not common to Halume otherwise, as it's like literally worship of gods is forbidden. But they will, like, during this age, people were literally like calling on others to worship them. And as a result, they end up ascending to some kind of godhood. I've been talking for a while, so let's take a breather and say, I feel like that's probably enough for now. I think the last thing I'll throw in is just that during, like, the gods' resolution to deal with this shit was to present demigodhood as, as I've described it, the Spotify to, like, ascendancy's pirating of music, where it's like they made it easier to do it through existing systems that they actually endorsed. To get some kind of power than it would be to try and go outside of what they consider to be sort of the ethical or legal system to ascend to godhood. There's more stories than just that, but that's kind of like why demigodhood got instated. And what we're talking about here is beings that are definitely like predating what we think of now, quote unquote, now, later, as godhood. But yeah, that was a lot. I'm going to have to take a sip of coffee because my throat's a little sore.
So I think we could start with the origin of divinities, mortal divinities, and then like figure out just because they go back so late or so early that we could have a lot of them, and reasons why the god did this creation of demigodhood. And then maybe we could then talk about, there might have been so many demigods that it might have been a problem. They might have been a very strong voting block. And a democracy of the Ethereum. But I have a candidate for the first mortal divinity.
Okay, yeah.
The Empress.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that, because what we've talked about before is that, and we'll have to address this at some point, but consensus reality, I kind of breeze past that, but like, because in the world of Halume, faith makes it real, like the way that you see the world necessarily influences it, right? And so and especially during Avum Secunda, when the gods couldn't really see the natural flow of reality, they probably weren't as easily able to see where things were diverging from the way they wanted it to flow. And so things could maybe run off and become their whole other branches. I mean, oh, dude, that would actually maybe be... What if reality was... What if, like, reality and probability were kind of fractured in...
Yeah, I think they were kind of fucked up.
In Avum Secunda. Because they wouldn't be able to tend to. And, I mean, if you've seen Loki, you can kind of get the vibes of what we're talking about here a little bit. The idea of sort of, like, a divine timeline, a sacred timeline versus these, you know...
I mean, the Shorn are doing some work. As long as they last.
The Shorn. Yes, that's true. I mean, I think, and we can't, I think that we can't ignore that, right? Like the Shorn, which were gods who were basically stuck on the mortal side of the divide when the Ash Curse occurred. They become kind of like these comatose entities, but nevertheless, they still have some kind of interaction with like consensus reality, especially like, because literally their whole domain is material in a way that the ethereal gods are not.
And whatever the fuck that Yadiel and the Moon Sisters are doing.
Yeah, so anyways, I mean, and I think the thing is also, one of the things we also articulated previously was because of the way that what was cut off was the spiritual reality had a way of fracturing in the way that, because the material source flow, right, primordium, the spans through which the primordium flows that creates the physical matter of the world, that wasn't cut off. There was less of a chance for that stuff to get manipulated as much as the spiritual side of things. So maybe the fractures that we see have more to do with like spiritual deviation than they do physical, but they could still probably influence physical. Okay. Anyways, you were talking about the Empress though. I think you're right. And I'm almost wondering if like when Avum Tertius begins, she's kind of almost hitting the ground running. The, you know, the Empress of the Sanguine Elves, like maybe she was already considered an Empress at that point. Or like a divinity.
Yeah. I think what she was just, that of anyone who had the ability to stockpile magical power and had the adoration and faith of many, many people, the Empress is the top tier.
And I can kind of imagine that she maybe almost, like she wasn't even seen by the public much, right? But she was talked about. And even like, you know, high up, like lords, ladies, even like kings and queens of the Empire of the Elves might not have seen her on a regular basis.
Only at her
and
jubilee.
So it's, sure, right. Yeah, exactly. I mean, we could literally do shit like that, right? Like once every 50 years, the elves do some kind of shit.
Yeah.
But
not
like,
every
I mean,
50,
I
can maybe like every 500.
I think Year of Jubilee is every 50 years. Oh, but for the elves,
yeah,
you're saying
the elves would be 10 times.
Sure. Right. Right. Yeah, especially because I think during the Year of Jubilee, you're meant to free any slaves that you have and forgive all debts. I don't think the elves would want to do that every 50 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I guess what I'm saying is because she's not seen, you don't necessarily have to ratify reality with your perceptions of her. And so the perceptions can continue to grow. And especially because the elves have access to the Avariel, right? I think we know that the Avariel, which is sort of a dream realm that is unique to the elves, that like when they dream, this was our explanation for like trance state way back in the day when like elves do a 4-hour trance versus actually dreaming. It's that they're sort of immersed in this
cultural
sort of
subconscious.
Unified, yeah, ancestral dream. And I can imagine her growing as this larger and larger figure. And especially if people don't see her all the time, her legend only grows, right? So
that's our first one.
Do you think she's the first one to ascend beyond the Ethereum or beyond the Materium and into the Ethereum? Or do you think it's another one? Because I'm imagining that it's like maybe not like this actually becomes more commonplace, especially in later Avum Secunda, where it's not just the Empress, who for a long time is considered as sort of mortally locked into the Materium divinity, but it's also these other, you know, high ranking royalty among the elves who are rarely seen, are also seen almost like as part of her mini pantheon. And then maybe there's humans or other people who are close enough associated, maybe some half-elves, right, who might have a low-level access to the Everreal and get the vibes for how it works in a way where they, too, get the read of, if I cultivate a following, or if someone cultivates a following, we could also potentially have our own heroes who can match their might.
I think you're right. She's definitely mortally locked, and she's not the first person to ascend to the Ethereum as a god. Or a mortal god, or however we want to call it. And I don't know who that would be. Do you have any ideas on that?
Not particularly. I mean, I'm kind of playing with the idea of it could be fun if it was a human. I kind of like the idea, especially because, right, so after Avum Tertius, it's not just that the humans now, it is, you know, they've been sort of revolting against and fighting against the Sanguine Empire for millennia in little pockets that rise and fall. They're found out, destroyed, but, you know, whenever you enslave people, they will always seek to be freed and fight for their freedom. And no matter how much they pound them flat, they're terrified of uprising, right? The Sanguine Elves are. They're terrified of that the humans will rise up. I can totally imagine early Avum Tertius, some of those who are connected to Oberiska, which was the first Leyline Spire created, and it was actually a convocation of gnomes and elves. Gnomes and angels.
Yes.
That there was, you know, humans who escaped to the tower, and among sort of this more multicultural group of various ancestries, I mean, it could even be Tiri, right? I could imagine Tiri ascending to a kind of godhood. Maybe she sort of outlives the relative shortness of her life, and either her or a recollection of her, right, this sort of imprint in the consensus reality fabric of what people imagine her to be as a sort of reflection of, you know, a recollection of her nature, that maybe persists on and becomes a kind of ascended figure.
Maybe I was thinking of Gade, but Gade doesn't count. Gade was not mortal.
Well, and Gade also was around. I think they elected him in Avum Prima or in the intervening years after the Ash Curse, right?
No.
It wasn't Avum Prima.
It was Tertius.
You don't think so?
Well, I mean, it was the latter days of Segunda. Yeah, there was a missing spot for a while. Gade was with Tiri.
Oh. I maybe forgot that.
Yeah. The first time that...
Was Gade one of the archangels that interacted with Tiri?
Yeah. Gade, oh, wow. Gade ascended when the first spire was completed.
You're right. That's right. Because they knew one of the things that was necessary for them to complete the culminate thread was for all nine of the abstracts to be present, right? Yep. And that actually required governance on all nine of the region's thrones. And because one of them was absence, which ironically, I mean, and I think is totally fitting, right? During Avum Secunda, there was no joy.
There was no joy.
You know, the idea is that joy, the throne of joy is empty. And so with this, I mean, that works really well poetically, too,
yep.
Right? You know, it's like, you know, they ascend, then who is, and then Gade is this angel, right, who then ascends to godhood and is maybe, we know that they become enthroned, he's enthroned, so I have to assume that that means he's fully connected to one of the Animus, right? So even the Animus are like, yes, we're installing this figure. Maybe it was actually the Animus who did it, and it wasn't necessarily the Regents. Like the Animus,
I don't know if the
Regents
get a say over who's a Regent. I don't think they do.
I agree. Yes, exactly. That is not democratic, right? That is almost like this divine election that happens beyond, you know, it's more of a who can know it kind of, this is higher than even the gods understanding, the mysterious machinations of the way that the Animus determine stuff like that.
Yeah.
Which I realize I'm getting a little ahead of if you're a newbie. Animus are basically kind of like these slumbering titans that are the bodies of the heavens themselves. So each of the nine realms of the Ethereum are, you know, sort of these, you know, characterized slumbering figures. And the Animus themselves can sometimes quietly make these huge decisions that affect everything. And nobody can understand or see their wills in the same way that, like, you know, you can't commune with a tree, you know? So like the charting of their thinking is like, you know, watching the stars move over millions of years. Anyways, yeah, so they enthrone Gade. I think that that is absolutely correct. And I kind of wonder if the gods, almost in recognition, actually catch away Tiri and give her sort of an honored place. Although I guess that's not really in their authority, right? It would have been the faith of the people to see her that way. But I can imagine, I'm trying to imagine it sort of almost like a gift of being like, you will be forever remembered for what you have done, because you have blessed every mortal who will live from now until, you know, the last ley line spire is destroyed.
And I think Tiri was well known. Tiri certainly had the faith because Tiri went across the world and created the spire.
Right. Who wouldn't know that, right? Those things became like lodestones for people because they were this source of nourishment for the soul that people hadn't experienced for tens of thousands of years. So it makes sense to me that Tiri might be the first. Yeah, I think she's sort of the first ascended. And this is maybe what clues other mortals into the fact that this is even possible, right? Like, they had understood sort of the mortal godhood of the Empress who can reside within the Materium, but like, Tiri straight up is like, no more. You know, she's like, who is it? Enoch or whoever who walked with God and was no more, like walked with God for 200 and something years and then just sort of was called up to heaven.
I was going to go for
Mary. At least that's the interpretation
Mary
people
was
have.
Assumed, according to Catholic doctrine.
Mary might actually be a good metaphor for this too, because there's almost this like kind of divine, you know, savior. Sort of, she's almost like the mother of, sort of the spiritual motherhood, yeah.
Yeah, Mary is okay. Particularly weird in Catholic doctrine because I think she's original sinless.
Yeah,
which is that like, one's feels weird, man.
That one's a little bit more foreign to me because I guess I can kind of make sense in a theoretical state of like if you look at doctrine, it wouldn't make a like how does you know does original sin get you know passed on from the parent to the child, and if so, then wouldn't you know Jesus have original sin and
well, yeah, that's why
it doesn't Mary's work. You're supposed to be the perfect savior, and right, exactly. But then also, how you know was did that mean her mother?
No, was also God was handing out like, original sin. He ran out that day. He's like, fuck, I go back to the store and get more. But there's one child left. Well, you know, whatever.
Here we go. And which then begs the question: well, why couldn't you've just done that to Jesus? But anyways, whatever. We're not here to talk about that. It is funny though. I appreciate it. You know, it's just a different way of understanding doctrine. I don't think it's necessarily here nor there. But the thing that I think that I like that this gets at though is that it's slightly different from sort of the Christian mythos, right? Where Tiri is not a mother figure necessarily or a matriarchal figure. She's an engineer. You know, a spiritual one, right? But literally her whole thing was, I am going to almost like NASA this shit. Like, we're going to do some The Martian problem solving to figure out how to use magical technology to restore, you know, the soul, which I think is, I'd be real curious to see how that sort of relates to, I never thought about this before, but like, dude, artificers who like have little altars to Tiri, I imagine that's a thing, right? That's got to be a thing.
Yeah, they regularly send in an Avum Nuncia. They regularly send cars into space with Tiri's name attached.
Right. Right. Yeah, exactly. It's like you're making an Elon Musk reference.
Yes, I am.
It's like it's like a sacrifice, Jesus. That's ridiculous. Okay, but let's fast forward for a second here. So who knows, you know, maybe we come back to that. Who knows who exactly were some of the first ascended, but word sort of gets out, right? Mortals figure out that they can kind of cultivate a following. I don't know if it's actually that well known. I think there's a point where sort of the floodgates open and this is much more understood. But I think for a time, it's maybe almost this like Kabbalistic secret, not Kabbalah, like a cabal. Although, same origin of the word.
When did the fucking crazy wizard troop exist? I always forget them. They fought the dragons.
Oh yeah, you're talking about the first wizard, right?
No, not the first wizard. The wizard group that was fighting the Cold War against the dragons.
You're talking about the Child of Five stuff, right?
No. The no? wizard group that was fighting the Cold War against the dragons.
Are you talking about the Bellum Obscura?
Yes.
Okay. You're talking about the Bellum Obscura. That's, you mean like the nine who have one of kind of each of the different alignments and stuff, right? Who are like way, way high up, distant, like, you know, they're using other people as sort of their troop.
The super
and people
wizards.
Don't know that they're, yeah. The Bellum Obscura was Avum Cortis.
Okay.
So that is some time from now, right? Avum Tertius is, I think, around 9,000 years, and then Avum Cortis is, I feel like, not quite 4,000.
Okay, then we don't, they're too advanced. They're past the demigodhood stuff, so we don't have to worry about
it. Yeah, I think that they're more of... they're more of what you kind of think of as your conventional like liches or whatever, where they're undying for sure. They've figured out some ways to kind of do on immortality, and they're not necessarily necromantic, but they're doing it through other means, because by that point I think that like, you know, demigods and stuff are heavily codified, right?
Yeah.
Like even in late Avum Tertius we know that the demigods is like the main structure that the gods have to resolve these issues and disputes.
All right, so that's not them, because I was thinking they could be demigods, but I think you're right.
Yeah.
It's too far.
I think it's possible that maybe one or two of them are. I mean, I'm not necessarily opposed to that. You know, we can talk about that, because it depends on their associations as well. Or maybe they once were or something. I want to have fun with those characters. But these ones, so I'm imagining, there's sort of almost like this cabal, right? Like one person finds out, and they end up getting a cult following. Maybe a bunch of humans sort of have this one savior-like figure. The first... couple hundred years
of Tertius,
right? We have the whelming, right? And there's like, it's raining all the time, the water level is actually slowly raising, people are trying to escape out of the basin of the ocean where they had, you know, formed their civilizations around the last vestiges of water, bodies of water. They're looking for higher ground, and this takes like
that,
you know,
dragonborn lady who saved all those people, remember her? Lightning.
Yes,
definitely demigod.
Yes, we
definitely
I can't remember her name, but she's definitely yes. And also because the dragons, their relationship to both the Skarl, which is the dragon spirit, right, that they all share, and to their own culture of like the way that they feel about dragons themselves, I think that there's maybe some play in language or something where they could actually be talking about her as almost like, oh, she is a dragon, right? Like she's a trueborn dragon in her soul or something. And the more that they become like convinced and sort of the stories continue to percolate, maybe she's the first ascended after Tiri. I like that idea. I think that that's fun. What if this is where, I'm kind of playing with the idea of like Dragonlance, classic like Dragon Slayer stories, right? Of a dragon in a mountaintop, you know, lair of some kind. Some of their origins, at least in the early millennia of Avum Tertius, kind of can originate from some of that. That could be fun. But yeah, whatever the case is, I think what I'm imagining where this eventually goes is as kingdoms are sort of trying to pick up the pieces, you know, the elves, it takes them longer to respond. And the Eldium Imperio does eventually like take over again and or attempts to, right? And they have, you know, greater influence and start to slowly try and snuff out a lot of other civilizations. But I think by this point, we probably see kingdoms and of like humans settled whose, you know, parents were maybe part of the whelming and escaping the floods of the, you know, of the whelming and of the old empire, the Sanguine Empire. But in the intervening years, they have completely forgotten that enslavement was ever a part of their people, or it was a long ago story, right? Of like my great grandfather or something was enslaved. And the elves, you know, this was for them, it was, well, you know, you're still mine, right?
Yeah.
I own you because any children that your parents had, you know, I own you. So they
show up. I got the fucking certificate right here.
Yeah, exactly. Like you're, you know, yeah, of course, literally, like they could be literally showing like a ledger full of like the names of all of your parents. Like, how the fuck do you know all this? And it's like, because you were mine. I owned you. And I imagine anyways, a lot of like conflicts and skirmishes that go on like this, humanity starts to kind of like really, nest up and like, you know, really close ranks, try and reinforce themselves, protect against these elves who are attempting to just try and get their property back.
Yeah.
Right. I can imagine that low level deification of some heroic figures who lead these groups.
Yeah.
Begin to happen.
And the elves are like, you know, they're on the phone with the gods being like, look, what the fuck is this bullshit?
Right. It's our job to look after them. You get this, right? You understand governance, right? You're supposed to be governance. We're like you. We're trying to look after the
They're worshiping people. This isn't fair. We're not allowed to do that.
Exactly.
They're cheating.
And that's part of it, right? We know that the gods, when they come back to reality, they're coming back into the daycare, and you know there's like one kid smearing the other's face with face paint. Another one's like crying in the corner with a broken toy or whatever. They're like, what the fuck is going on? And then they start just kind of trying to run around the room, deal with all this shit. I can totally imagine them trusting one of the older kids to be like, yeah, you help. Okay, you're willing to help me take care of these other ones. Can you look after them for a little while? Right, and literally like reinforcing some of the elven stuff and not looking too closely at it. Oh, I don't even need to look at this gift to know exactly what that is. It's Carter just sent me the when Troy from Community comes back with the pizza and like returns the room to just see like everyone's on fire, somebody's got shot in the leg, and like that's very good. So I think that's probably kind of where this ends up. We know that the gods then start pushing against the Ascended. I don't think that that breaks hard though, and like on an inquisitorial level, like inquisitions and shit, until later.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of wondering, do you think it's the dragonborn lady, the Drew who ascends, who sort of fucks shit up in the Ethereum, or do you think it's somebody else?
I think it's somebody else.
Okay. So she ascends. What do the gods do with that? How do they react to that?
I think they're like, we'll let you in, but we need to have a staff meeting.
I think that they form some early rules. Yeah. Like literally it's like somebody knocking on your door and being like, yeah, it says that I have now inherited this property. Like, you know, you guys are all sort of at like, I don't know, a wake or something. And like, there's a reading of the will or whatever. And they're like, yeah, I got a letter of mail saying, I don't even know who this person is, but it says I now own all of this entire like room worth of stuff. Do you guys know what this is? What's going on here? And they're like, hang on one sec. Close the door. Talk quickly. I guess, do we just let them into the vestibule for now? Sure. At least for now. I don't know. They could probably push charges if we don't. So, you know, they open the door, let her in.
You're like, do you have any friends that might have also gotten the stamp collection?
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, but I imagine what eventually happens. So the gods allow for some kind of rules to take place, some sort of limited legislation, but maybe is not. They don't really know what to do with it, so they kind of shrug their
shoulders. They really get a few stinkers. They get like tyrants who abuse people and are just like, yes, now I can be a god who can, you know, get all the power and all the things I want. And they're like, oh, we don't like you. You need to get out of here.
Well, especially because I can imagine some of the domains sort of actually shrinking slightly the size of other gods' domains, where it's like, it's almost like taking a little chunk of this one, a little chunk of this one's being like, you know, and it's a very small sliver, but the gods are like, oh, okay, I guess I thought I was promised that, you know, that sugar pot, you know, for sugar on the dining room table, this nice piece of china or whatever, but I guess it's yours and your will supersedes mine. All right, well, that's fine. I still get the jet ski, I guess, so that's not a problem for me. I was kind of hoping to have that sugar pop, but it's not a big deal.
Yeah, and then, so I think that, and I think several of these people, the like tyrants, are met with so much hostility by the gods and feel so like, oh, this isn't the great like tyranny of stuff I wanted. I'm actually really limited in what I can do because the gods don't like me. So I think they fall. I think they go to the mutes. They're like, the demons, they like me better.
Wow. Dude. Well, especially because I think we've played with the idea before that the Ethereum is not entirely free of corruption, right? What we know is for sure that all of Halume, as it's sort of like the more cosmic spiritual realms, those definitely aren't all exclusively free of corruption. Like Ostios, right, is a good example of something that's not entirely taken over, but is mostly corrupted, but there are still some places where it's unfractured. And this might be that taint that I've kind of been playing with and looking for like a long time, is a way, Because I think it's not right away, right? Like, I imagine that the first couple of ascended gods who have pretty sliver-like domains where they're only sort of touching on some very light stuff or with a specific group of people, the gods are like, well, how much harm can they really do? You know, they're not really, it's fine or whatever. But I can imagine one of them stirring up their people because they're almost like a Conan the Barbarian might makes right character more than they are any sort of ethics that the gods are usually used to, even the martial pantheon ones, right? And so they look at like the apparent weakness, quote unquote, of like a different god's domain and being like, you know, as time goes on, they're like, you don't actually do a good job of watching over this domain. It you don't deserve it.
I've drank all milkshake.
You can do a better job, right? Right, exactly. And so then they start to stir up their followers to sort of start to push against this and like take this god down. And like we kind of mentioned, the god either straight up gets destroyed where they no longer exist anymore, or they're weakened to the point where they become a shadow.
That makes them really fades into the background.
Right. But like whatever the case is, I think that one of these, you know, might makes right figures actually takes over a chunk of that domain, and this is what triggers the gods off, like what you were saying. And then I think it's at this point where maybe some of the others will say, well, fuck this, we'll go to the mutes then. You won't have us, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which I love that, dude. I'd never even considered like evil demigods. Oh, come on, Frank. Missed opportunity.
E-demigods, edemigods, edemigods.
I think with your bad mantos, it'd just be emigods.
Emigods.
Emigods with two E's, yeah.
E-gasp.
But yeah, like it's, yeah. Okay, that's really cool. I think we probably should be aware of time. We still got a little bit of time here, but yeah, what would be a good stopping point here? Because... Oh, you know what? I did want to bring up the Inquisition. That maybe would be a good sort of last thing to articulate.
Never expect the demigod Inquisition.
Well, it's the next logical step, right? The gods are like, well, we need people who can carry out our missions on the ground. And like, we can send angels, but there's a natural limit to how much that can do, especially because so much of this is like they're literally doing, you know, worship of some of these individuals. And I think at this point, it is so prevalent. Like, probably every city-state of, like, humankind, and probably also some halflings and gnomes and even, like, dwarves and stuff, might have some of their own sort of mortal gods who are vying for first ascendancy, right? Vying for that ascendancy into the Aetherium.
Yeah, I don't think we get any elves because of how the Avaril works. It's just, like, a weird thing.
I think we still are left with some of, like, the... you know, the high figures left over from Avum Secunda, but they don't, the power is more, not necessarily waning, but sort of less relevant because everyone is vying for their own kingdoms, right? And trying to pick up the pieces, but they want to pick up the pieces in a way where it puts them on the top of the pile, right? And so I think it literally gets to a point where we have like almost the city-state condition where because I think we get to the empires, right? The empires get rebuilded and the elves reconstitute a lot of their quote unquote lost lands or lost peoples. But it doesn't happen for the first maybe even full 1,000 years. It takes a while for them to kind of resort out their shit.
Yeah.
And by that time, I'm imagining a lot of kingdoms of humanity and others who have, it's literally almost just like every city state, it's expected that you have a mortal god who's leading it. Because if you don't, why would you go to this city state and not another? Like, yeah. Who's protecting you, right?
Yeah. Do you
what's
want
your deterrent
fucking,
for robbers and bandits and shit?
Do you want Storgmog the stump fucker, or do you want a city with no god?
I'll take a stump fucker over a godless city any day. Like, where's your power, right? If you're a city state without a god, you don't have any godhood assigned to your city state. Then, like,
Storgmog,
what's to
is
stop
come
this
over
other person
gonna,
from just yeah, exactly the stump. The stump fucker is going to fuck your stumps.
Yeah.
He's going to, you know, what's going to stop him from fucking your stumps? Nothing.
Yep.
So, yeah. And I think, yeah. And this is where that Inquisition comes in, right? Is the gods say, all right, we got to get our shit together. They're wreaking havoc in the heavens. They're wreaking havoc in the Materium.
It's a joint effort.
Some kind of control needs to be enacted. And from what the elves tell us, they like had this shit locked down. Was it perfect? No, but we can work on that from the inside. You know, the police don't need to be completely
abolished.
Yeah, abolished or anything. They just need to be redeemed.
Yep.
You know, the slavers don't need to be completely, you know, we'll work on unenslaving the people over time. You know, we saw how well it worked for America. So, you know, we're sure that there will be no repercussions here.
Slaving's a good job, mate.
Well, and again, like, especially everybody's running around, right? Their hair's on fire. The gods have limited perspectives, far more limited than they used to in terms of the realms. And they're probably used to being cagey with information because they didn't have to tell each other what they were up to, right? They mostly kind of just picked up the ambient vibes or their angel messengers or whatever would share with them, hey, this is what this person is doing or whatever. So the infrastructure within the Ethereum for them to deal with this shit on a holistic level is not there. And so this is the best solution that they can come up with is, all right, well, we will just sort of authorize these elves in our names to just start going and slaying these gods, or really just to go and put them under control, yeah, and only kill if absolutely necessary or whatever. And then of course the elves are like, well,
then you get a lot of elven mortals, champions, you know, of the regions that are just like running through human cities like taking on the Stumpfucker. Yep. Storgmog.
Mm-hmm. Yep, dude, I just had this very kind of evocative image of an elven champion of some region who literally has this like divine chain of golden light that you can see sort of like through like arcane sight that like sort of disappears into the Ethereum or something, whatever, however you want to interpret that, you know, kind of linked up to the abstracts, and like is fighting this like mighty mortal god, you know, in this city state or whatever. Then they're like, just, I don't know, that sounds pretty fucking cool, you know, like the elf is seen as mortal. And they have like these, you know, 40K ass Inquisitor robes that are really just Spanish Inquisition robes, but like, you know, reinterpreted. Yeah. And oh, man, that sounds like good shit, dude. I think that's probably a good place to stop for today.
I agree. Thank you for listening, or ear seeing. If you were pleasured by what you heard, don't hesitate to share this with others. Feel free to rate and review us on the podcasting platform of your choice. And never forget to ding that bell.
For references to previous episodes and other fun links, refer to the podcast description. You can find our Twitter and email there, perfect for asking questions or things on things you'd like us to cover in an episode.
Thanks as always to Josh, the Silkman Silker, for the Land of Heroes theme, and to Sam Wade for the album art. You can find Sam at BySamWade on Twitter and Instagram.
Capping off each episode this season with a reading from the Book of Truth, which is AI Religion Bot on Twitter. Grand Inquisitor Carter, what excerpt do you have for us?
Here we go. Thou art the beginning and the end of the repose of all the gods. Venerable is the silence of the gods, the silence of the seasons, the silence of the dawn, the silence of twilight, the silence of the sea, the silence of the land.
Wow. That's good. I like that. That's definitely some elven shit. Grand Inquisitor... for sure.
And until next time, don't forget, there are always more stumps to fuck.
More art to burn in the name of the Inquisition. That is something we didn't touch on that I think, I guess I'll just throw that in as a last second lore bit. Because, man, I would Starbucks stump fucker. Carter just dropped the Discord bombs. Yeah, no, I would love to talk about that in a future episode.
Yeah.
Just pick up where we left off. But until then, more stumps to fuck. Did you say that?
Yes.
Damn it, more. Oh, I already did one. Art to burn or whatever. Yeah, okay, yours was better. All right, thanks everyone. Bye. Bye. Why do I always wave to the mic?
Yes,
you were recording? Were you recording?
I was, yes.
Okay, good. Oh, yeah. All right, that's great. Oh, man. Hey, it is good to see you again, man. I missed you. It's I need more Carter in my life, you know?
I think everybody does. So.
Yeah. Hey, did I tell you that I officially realized I'm actually bi?
No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, when I was saying the queer thing, I'm like, fucking sure, yeah. You know, okay.
Well, I think I've maybe mentioned in the past that I'm like, I think I'm biromantic, which was the idea. Like, it's a term that means specifically you can have like a romantic relationship, but it's not necessarily sexual. What I realized is it's actually just something Rachel was explaining to me as another person who's bi, is like, yeah, no, it's just that sometimes your attraction to people can manifest in different ways. It might be that you're biromantic, but it might actually just be that the way that one thing starts might be different depending on like the gender presentation of the person.
Yeah.
And so for me, what I realized is I was like, I think it's that I'm less sexually attracted to men, but I can totally imagine a romantic situation that becomes sexual, versus I'm more at its base sexually attracted to women. And then that can sort of, then romance kind of develops out of that, or like affection or love. So anyways, yeah, I'm bisexual. I didn't know it for the longest time. The weirdest thing was a few months ago when we were driving to a vacation. And I like was, we were, Rachel and I were talking. And I like was like, yeah, I think, oh, so I guess if I'm bi, I'm not straight. Huh? Oh, okay. Huh. So I'm not a straight man. You're, that's interesting.
You've left the world.
And I was like, that was, I think, weirder than accepting that I was bi. So anyways, yeah, there you go. I just came out.
You've left the winner's club of straight white men.
I know. Dude, literally there was a, I was getting a CT scan for my chest for surgery. Not necessarily that it's going to happen. It might happen. Who knows? And it literally had me like put down like, you know, what is your, you know, sexual preference or whatever.
Why the fuck are they asking that?
I don't know. I don't know, man. But like literally for that reason, I was like, I there was a second there. I was like, what if I just put down straight? Because do I know that I'm bi? And I was like, that's, just put down, I prefer not to answer.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give that. I'm not going to give that to them, man. Who knows what this, down, what the government's going to look like in 5 years. Yeah,
it's like
really what it is.
Still ask
like,
if you're fucking gay or if you've had gay sex if you when you give blood. It's like, fuck you.
Yep. Yeah. Or like, dude, the weirdest thing to me is whenever you like write stuff out. I remember even as a kid, like you're filling out like little tests or ACTs or whatever, you know, your like standardized tests. And I remember like they'd always ask if you're Hispanic/Latino or non-Hispanic/Latino. And it's like, what if you're Asian? I don't know. But like sometimes they say like, oh, you know, it's that or Pacific Islander or these other things. But sometimes the test is literally just ask you whether you're white or you're Hispanic/Latino or non-Hispanic/Latino. Just fucking, you know, racist shit from years ago that just slowly percolates down and manifests in really weird legislative ways.
A lot of times the weird shit is that the United States government, I think the Census Bureau does not recognize Hispanic as a race. It's an ethnicity. So you can be white and Hispanic, and you can be white and not Hispanic because it's an ethnicity and not a race.
Gotcha. Yeah, there's probably some actually kind of woke reasons for this stuff. Like, that's the thing, is I know that a lot of this does come out of like human rights and like people fighting for stuff. It's just like the reason why it exists is because of injustice is more what I'm trying to get.
Yes,
at.
Of course.
You know, in the first place, we wouldn't have the necessity to sort of specify these things unless, you know, prejudice existed. But, you know, whatever. C'est la vie. It's just how life is. Okay. Anyways.
La vie est drôle.
So, yeah, we're doing Demigods, Knave, and Tertius, right?
Yep.
And I'm bi.
Yep. Spoilers.
I mean, I'm kind of, it's probably not that surprising, right, to you, like the way that we talk about dudes sometimes and like how horned up I get about some big old hunks.
I mean, I'm similar, but I don't, you know, I just don't feel that attraction. But I mean, I just intellectually can understand that a big hunk of change, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you're an ally.
I'm an ally, exactly. I am. And, you know, it's just, that's something that I have access to. It's just, it's like a part of how I view the world, is I'm a very intellectually minded and I'm understanding focused rather than like emotionally feeling.
Well, and I mean, like part of the weirdness is, dude, like I definitely was like sexist and misogynist and LGBTQ weird growing up. And I didn't view myself that way, and suddenly claiming that I'm bi doesn't make any of that go away, or doesn't change the fact that I present as a straight white guy.
Yeah.
Although Rachel was like, do you though? Like, do you actually present straight? Like, just
I mean, the mustache.
Me, anybody who actually
and
knows
then
me.
I was said you would give me Fred vibes, and Fred is
yeah,
definitely
yeah,
not.
some Freddie Mercury. Yep.
No,
but
I was
like,
actually
but
going
just,
with Fred
I can pass, right? Oh, okay, Fred from Scooby-Doo.
The ascot is not straight. I'm just going to put that out there. The ascot is not straight.
I do love to dress like a cross between a Navy cadet and, I don't know, an English schoolboy who's also in a 70s hippie band.
Yeah.
I don't know. Fred's got weird vibes. They're not so bad. I'd pick Fred over Shaggy any day, though.
Yeah,
I feel
Shaggy's
like Fred
not put
is
together.
Still...
Fred is...
Fred is a himbo for sure, yeah. But, like, I would trust him to...
He drives. He funds the operation.
Well.
It's his car.
Is it his car?
It's his car. Yeah, the Mr. Van is Fred's car. It's why he drives. Like,
oh, that's very funny.
Yeah, he's responsible.
No,
he's just kind of an
idiot.
Point
just, so yeah. My point just being like, your sexuality certainly does not preclude you from being prejudiced. You know, like, and so
yeah, just look at fucking Mike Pence.
Learning to be anti-racist and
definitely gay.
Mike Pence thing. I mean, I don't, probably, allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah.
Allegedly, as Robert Evans would reinforce, yeah. Allegedly. Yeah, I mean, it's just, yeah, it's just, you know, it doesn't change, it definitely changes stuff, right, acknowledging this, but it also doesn't change the fact that, like, learning to be anti-racist and anti-prejudice is a lifelong endeavor for me because I've grown up with so much privilege, you know, and that's probably not going to meaningfully change. Yeah. Anyways, should we do the episode?
Yes.
All right, let's talk about the real demigods, white men.
Jesus. only one demigod, his name is Jesus, and he's white.
Oh, man. How many times do you think we get canceled in one episode?
Oh, so many
Fuck.
Times. Fuck. We're canceled for the right reasons, though.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. Man, I can't even get started on my faith walk, man. It's been an interesting ride. Yeah,
is that in your kitchen?
Started. My what?
Your faith walk?
Oh, my faith walk? You bastard.
I'm just imagining that, like, it's got a big cross on it, and you, like, really, you go to town on some, like, stir-fried veggies in that thing? Ooh,
oh my gosh.
Good.
Is it like a pan that looks like one of those vats from Neon Genesis Evangelion? That's like literally just like a crucible trough that you're like pouring veggies into.
That would not
where
be efficient.
Like carrot beans just like frothing out of it.
How do you
well, some
stir
kind
it?
Of like angelic. Yeah, you really don't. You just slosh. You just sort of do an XY slosh.
Yeah. It's got four
this
handles.
This is such a stupid. This is such a stupid picture. We gotta keep going. Okay. Oh my god. No, I can't keep on starting stuff. My deconstruction has been going okay. I have no idea whether there's a god or not. I'm not even sure. Honestly, Everything Everywhere All at Once was pretty solid because it kind of deals with some sort of metaphysical questions about meaning, if there's a multiverse and stuff like that. It's pretty good. Active nihilism. Look it up. Difference between active and passive nihilism. I don't ever want to be
I've got a gift for that.
Oh, are you familiar? You probably actually know what I'm talking about.
No, I don't know much about nihilism, but I do have a gift.
Bowling dude Walter Donnie? Nihilists? Oh.
Say what you will, Frank, about the tenets of National Socialism.
It's pretty funny. Nihilist, fuck me. I mean, say what you will about National Socialist, but at least it's an ethos, that's pretty funny. Yeah. No, fuck National Socialist, but...
Yes.
But go normal socialism, globalist socialism, I don't know, populist socialism? That's probably a really fraud. I have no idea what I'm talking about here. We're definitely stepping outside my...
Communist.
Knowledge
socialist.
Bowl. Let's go with that. I can't keep starting shit. We got to just actually start the podcast properly.
There's one thing you can start, Frank.
And now it's 12 minutes in. Yeah, there's one thing I can start, which is